listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and welcome. It's Sunday, November 6, 2011. I am your host, Doug Kelly. So glad you could join us tonight. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular educational program. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit in a variety of ways. We're so glad that those live listeners could join us tonight. We also welcome those who are listening to the archive version of this. Now, tonight on the program, I'm going to be talking about paranormal research. Where do we go from here? The gist of that is, in recent decades, we've really made precious little advancement in understanding the nature of spirits, UFOs, and other mysteries like Bigfoot and so forth. So we're going to talk about whether or not we have compelling evidence for the existence of these anomalies. We're going to talk about what we do now, and I'll get into that in just a moment. Also with us tonight, of course, is Dr. Vicki Hunter. Welcome, Vicki.
Good evening, Doug. I'm glad to be here tonight. It's a very exciting show.
Yes, you are live from Sedona, Arizona.
I am live from the cold Arizona. It's really cold here. It's an anomaly. You know, it's a very rare thing for it to be this cold in Sedona. It's normally about 10 degrees colder than Phoenix, but, ooh, she's a burr on today.
Yeah. Of course, we have to put that in perspective. We're not talking like Arctic cold. We're not talking like Canada cold.
No.
48 degrees?
About 48 degrees. But normally it's about, you know, 68. It was really warm a week ago. You know, it was somewhere around 80 degrees here, 75 degrees. That's Fahrenheit, of course. And, yeah, I'm used to the Celsius. I'm from Canada, everybody. So this, you come down here and you expect it to be a little warmer, and it ain't. There was snow yesterday morning on the mountains, but how beautiful. We're going to get into that later, Doug. I've got lots to tell you about Sedona.
Cool. So you'll be talking about vortexes. And
we will.
Tonight, Camille is not going to be with us for her segment. She's a bit under the weather. We hope she gets feeling better soon, and we'll look for her next week.
Now, yes, indeed.
If you have questions tonight, you can call in. Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls. The numbers are on your screen, 714-459-3973. We'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can ask questions in the chat room as well. All right, so let's talk about paranormal research. Where do we go from here? Now, that's an interesting title, mostly because I came up with it. I'm just kidding that, well, not really so much, but kind of. Here's the point. You know, here we are. We're 64 years now past Roswell. Of course, haunting-type phenomena has been around for forever. And frankly, so has UFO phenomena been around for, you know, a long, long time. But it really got its start, of course, in 1947 with Roswell and so forth. And, you know, in recent times, of course, cryptozoology has come into fashion, if you will. Bigfoot shows are on TV. A lot of mysteries. Loch Ness Monster, of course, has been around for, I don't know what, gosh. I know there have been sightings for hundreds of years, but it's really been in the public's mind in the last, 80 or so years with the surgeon's photo and all. So,
you know, I think we also have to keep in perspective, Doug, if I can say that 64 years ago at Roswell, we didn't have the communication then that we do now.
Right.
So it was, you know, all of the, it's very underground or in little newspapers or, you know, all of the information that's been passed along. So we've really only been, I think, in the last maybe 30 or 40 years talking about these topics. Like,
well, obviously it's escalated. I mean, with the advent of the internet, you know, what I call the great age of enlightenment, with the advent of the internet, because it's brought so many of us together with, you know, who are like-minded, who have similar interests, you know, and similar goals. So anyway, so I want to talk about this, you know, decades, where have we come, you know, what have we learned in all these decades? Well, we've learned some stuff. That's true. We have. And especially in the last, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, you know, we've honed some techniques. We've come up with additional techniques. There's a lot of researchers out there trying new things. Always a good thing. But my point has been for a long time, what have we really learned lately? And even over the last decade or two, what have we really, really learned? Well, on one hand, not a whole lot that we didn't already know. On the other hand, I think that what's happened is that has the field matured? I don't know. You know, I mean, not according to what most people would want. I mean, in ufology, we're looking for disclosure. In cryptozoology, you know, we want to find some objective proof of Bigfoot. In parapsychology and ghosts and spirits, we'd love to come up with some objective proof of that too. But the point is that we've come a long way, and now what are we left with? Well, you know, we're left with some pretty compelling evidence, reasonably compelling. We have a logically defensible basis for believing in a lot of this stuff based on a lot of things, a lot of credible reports. And so for the paranormal or anomalous researcher, the question is now, what do we do? Are we going to keep doing the same thing? Well, you know the old adage, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And we want to continue with the research. So I'd like to talk about the ultimate mission of paranormal research. And I really haven't heard this anywhere else. I'm sure other people have it, but I haven't heard it, and it's just kind of what I do. When we consider all of the varied types of research being conducted in the world today, we find, for most of them, one underlying motivation, and that is to better understand and enhance the human condition. Now, when I talk about research, I'm not including weapons research or biochemical research for, you know, viruses, different things like that, to harm. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all the types of research being done. For example, cancer research. We take that as one example. If you think about it, cancer research is certainly conducted to enhance the human condition by discovering treatments for the disease and hopefully eradicating it altogether. I'm not going to get into conspiracy stuff about, you know, you can't really do that because there's too much money in it and all that stuff. The point is we're trying to find a cure not only to cancer but to many, many illnesses. And, of course, as we conduct research in cancer and other illnesses, we're also conducting research into biology, and so we're gaining more knowledge that way as well. How about another type of research, space research? A lot of folks wonder why we're doing a lot with space, but, you know, we've really learned a lot from space research. You know, we've conducting experiments in space, and, you know, the Hubble telescope and the Spitzer and the others, Kepler, you know, they're really adding to our knowledge base, and if they're also improving our human condition through knowledge. And we've learned so much more about the universe as a result of recent technology in space, these different types of telescopes that are out in orbit. We found, gosh, last I saw was over 1,200 planets, but not all of them had yet been validated, but as many as 1,200 extra solar planets outside of our solar system. Space research has led to new products, different ways of doing things. It's even improved medical research, which again improves and enhances the human condition. So the point of this is that when we look at research, what's it there for? Why are we doing it? Yes, we're trying to learn more, but it's usually because we're trying to improve the human condition. and understand it better. So now let's consider the motivation behind paranormal research, or anomalous research, as I prefer to call it. You know, specifically answering some of those questions. One is, does our consciousness survive death of the physical body in a coherent fashion? You know, are there ghosts and spirits? Do they exist? That's the question. Do UFOs exist? Do ETs exist? What about creatures like, you know, cryptids like Bigfoot and others? And there are others. Do they exist? But what's the motivation? If we can prove some of these things, let's just take, for example, life after death. If we can prove life after death, would that not bring hope to millions, billions of people? In other words, we are enhancing the human condition, right? We're adding to knowledge. If we can prove it, it would certainly add a bona fide hope to billions of people. It would eliminate fear of death, at least like we have now. It would show us that this life is not all there is. It would reassure us that our dead loved ones are still alive and doing well. Moreover, it would give us hope for seeing them again. I mean, you can't even put a price on that one. You can't even put a price on it. But let's take the other side of that coin. If, on the other hand, we prove that our consciousness does not survive death of the physical body, well, we would gain insight into the human mind, human psychology, and the impact that deep belief can have on human perception, right? So either way, we're learning more about us. Now, let's talk about three different basic research missions or approaches within anomalous research. First, suppose that your sole mission as a paranormal researcher, and I am speaking to paranormal researchers here, let's suppose that your sole mission is to prove the existence of ghosts and spirits, for one. It could be UFOs, it could be whatever. But let's just use ghosts and spirits. Your sole mission is, as a researcher, is to prove their existence. Now, if you were to one day prove such a thing, then you would obviously, quote, win, unquote, so to speak, or be successful. But if you were to discover that proof, and I mean objective proof, that ghosts and spirits do not exist, then you would, quote, lose, so to speak. So if your objective, your mission, is to prove that they exist, and you do, you'd win. If it's to prove they exist and you prove that we don't survive death, then you would lose. That's just the terminology. That's one approach, to prove that they exist. A second approach is to prove that they don't exist, kind of the negative of that, to debunk them. And again, the same concepts would apply. If you were to prove that, yep, we do not survive death, you'd, quote, win. If, however, you found objective proof that we do survive, then you'd lose. Well, so you got a win-lose thing going on here. Now let's talk about a third alternative. What if your mission is, as a paranormal researcher, was to better understand and enhance the human condition by researching and investigating anomalous phenomena? The cool thing about this approach is that you would win regardless of whether ghosts exist or don't exist, regardless of whether UFOs exist or don't exist, regardless of whether Bigfoot exists or doesn't exist, because any of these outcomes carries profound existential meaning for humanity and will ultimately enhance our understanding of the human experience. Isn't that true? If we understand, I mean, think about it. You've got all these people seeing stuff, all kinds of stuff, experiencing stuff. You know, stuff is a good word. It kind of covers everything. You know, so we got stuff. We're seeing stuff. Well, either it's real or it's not real. And if it's real, then, you know, there's got to be something to it. And I think there is. But what if it's not real? And we're still seeing it. We're still experiencing it. Wow. Does that not open up a lot of stuff, a lot of fields, a lot of areas for research to better understand who we are as human beings? In my opinion, yes. And the beautiful part about, regardless of what we find, we win. And I love win-win. I believe in win-win. So Here's a powerful paradigm shift that I would like to recommend. If you are in paranormal research, don't approach your investigations from the standpoint that you're there to, you know, investigate a haunting or a psychokinesis or PK event or a UFO or whatever. Rather, approach each investigation with the mindset that you are there studying the human condition within the context of anomalous phenomena. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that if you only go on an investigation and sit for hours futilely hoping to catch something, it will get old. It's going to get old pretty fast after just a few investigations because, you know, not really much happens, especially on haunting type investigations. And UFOs, man, it's almost, I mean, you're always there after the fact on most of them. So it gets old. Almost anyone can go and take a client statement, do some vigils, and if that's all you do, why are you doing it? What do you hope to gain? You know, what's the point of being a paranormal researcher if that's it? However, if you go on an investigation with a focus of better understanding why people are experiencing paranormal phenomena, you will always win. You will always come away with just a little more knowledge of human nature and psychology that you can apply to future investigations, as well as your overall research approach. And this is in addition to any proof or compelling evidence you might find to support the existence of any of this stuff, whether it's spirits or UFOs or whatever. This is a humanistic approach, folks. And this humanistic approach is not only dignified, but it requires knowledge, training, and experience in a number of related fields. This is the cool part, as far as I'm concerned, because you don't just study one thing. You know, this type of a humanistic approach is worthy of your training. It's worthy of your life experience, because you bring that to bear when you're doing this. This is one thing I have been trying to hammer into my students for years in the CPI course and the PhD paranormal science degree program. You know, it's worthy of your life experience. You've got to bring that together. You've got to bring it in. There's a lot more to being a researcher than just knowing how to use a few gadgets and being up on some of the end terms, if you will. This humanistic approach is an incredible evolutionary step up from the traditional approach, as far as I'm concerned. And this is the premise that I have found, this is the premise upon which, well, let me just pause for a second. We lost sound. Okay, so now I'm back. Thank you, John. Let me know if you're
Well, can anybody hear me as I speak up online here? It'd be good if you can acknowledge me.
All right. I can hear you, Vicki. Can you hear me?
All right. You're back.
Well, I switched mics, so I don't know.
Well, you know, this is, for all the benefits of advancing technologies, we do have our moments.
Yes, we do. All right.
You know, This is the thing, you know, we have to be so, you know, we've said it before in previous shows, we have to be very appreciative of the ability to have things like the internet, blog talk radio, but we also can't take it for granted either.
Yep. I love it when the mic dies in the middle of a broadcast. All right, we'll try this again. This mic is not quite as good as the other one, but if you can hear me okay, that's all that matters. So let me pick up where I left off here. I'm talking about bringing your life experience into the mix as a researcher because it is important. And I'm talking about a humanistic approach, and that is to study the human condition by way of anomalous phenomena, because we can always learn from that. And this humanistic approach is powerful, and it is a positive transformation and different in focus. It's a step up from the typical research objectives, the typical ones. In fact, it is this type of a focus or premise that I actually founded the Paranexus Anomalous Research Association, and the mission statement reflects that. Paranexus is a professional nonprofit trade association of dedicated and progressive ufologists, parapsychologists, and enthusiasts focused on researching and understanding the human condition through the scientific study of aerial, psychical, and anomalous phenomena, its reality, its reach, and its impact on humanity. That is exactly my research objectives, my approach. Let me check the chat. Are there any questions? Vicki, if you'd let me know if there are any questions or comments.
No questions at the moment. Just people affirming what you're saying.
Okay, good. I have a few attaboys, eh?
You do so.
Good. Okay, so we have every reason to conclude that certain types of anomalous phenomena exist. I mean, we just do. We have credible reports of spirit activity. We have credible reports of UFO activity. We have credible reports of even Bigfoot activity. We have all of these compelling, logically defensible reports. This being the case, you know, there's got to be more to doing this than just hunting ghosts, quote-unquote, or chasing lights in the sky. We need to focus on what it means for the human condition. So as you contemplate your mission as a paranormal researcher, and this, again, spills over into metaphysics, because that's all this is. That's all we're talking about, existence and consciousness. And if spirits, ghosts, UFOs, and Bigfoot don't impact our existence and our global consciousness, or the universal consciousness, I don't know what does. But as you contemplate your mission as a paranormal researcher, you stand a far better chance of winning, quote-unquote, that means being successful in your research, discovering meaningful answers. You have a better chance of doing this, of being successful, by remembering that the ultimate mission of the paranormal researcher is to better understand and enhance the human condition by researching and investigating anomalous phenomena, not just doing investigations for the sake of doing them. You know, you need to develop your mission and vision statements around a healthy humanistic approach. And that way, your research will always be meaningful to you and to others. Now, with this in mind, I'd like to encourage you to reimagine yourself, reinvent yourself, so to speak. You know, there, at this point in the paranormal field, and I'm talking about the broad paranormal community, that includes UFOs and cryptozoology and parapsychology and all this stuff, there are times when we feel we need to take stock of where we've been, where we're at, and all that. And that's what I'm trying to do here. Where are we at? And why are we doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you interested in anomalous research? What are you doing it for? Are you doing it for the thrill of the hunt, as so many do? Which is, in my opinion, is completely wrong. You know? Or are you doing it to add knowledge to humanity, add to the knowledge base that we all have? You got to know why you're doing it and what you expect from it. You know, it for the truly serious researchers, this is no hobby. This is part of who they are. This is part of the metaphysics of who they are. And it depends on how much you're into it, I guess. For me, this is no hobby. This is part of who I am and what I do. I am interested in all of it, fascinated in with all of it, and always have been and always will be. I want answers, and I'm one of those people who I don't care about the cool pictures, because they don't tell me anything. I've seen a zillion UFO pictures. I've seen a zillion so-called apparition photos. Most of them are not real. And even if they were, I just don't care. Yeah, cool picture, but I want to know why. I want to know, how can we reliably communicate with spirits? How can we learn more about ETs that are visiting here. Are they interdimensional? Well, you know, I'd like to know that too. I want to know what it means. Where do we as humanity, as the human race, fall in the whole lineup here? Where do we fit in? You know, where are we going to some of that interdimensional stuff when we die? You see, all of these things are interconnected. You can't just be a, quote, ghost hunter. Never be that. You can't just be a paranormal researcher who focuses on haunting-type phenomena. You can't, because there are overlaps. You can't just be a ufologist. You can't just be a cryptozoologist. Oh, well, you know, in my opinion, you can't, because you're going to be dealing with these different facets of all three of these, no, regardless of what you're studying, regardless of what you're researching here. I mean, there have been reports of Bigfoot with glowing red eyes sighted when there's a UFO or a flying saucer overhead. Well, if you don't know a little bit about that, you gotta find out. You gotta know how to put these things together. You have to know. You know, you have to know. So let me get back on track here. I kind of got off on a little bit of a tangent there. I'm sorry. Not really, though.
We like your tangent.
Yeah. Yeah, go off on a tangent again. So you need to reimagine who you are. Ask why you're doing this. Don't just go do investigations for the sake of doing investigations unless there's something to be gained. Training, yeah, fine. Good, go do it. But once you get to be a little seasoned, get a few investigations under your belt, you got to know about ufology, you got to know about psychic phenomena, you got to know about parapsychology, you got to know about haunting phenomena and some cryptozoology so that you know what you're dealing with. You know, there's been a lot of PK events associated with alien abductions. Well, you know, if you're on a ghost-related investigation and the people have missing time and PK events, if you're not trained in ufology, you're not going to pick up on this might not be a ghost thing at all. This could be something entirely different. And if you don't have that training, you're not going to know. So you got to get trained if you're not already. You got to know this stuff. Educate yourself. Grow. That's who we are, what we do. We're supposed to do that. Never stop learning. Never stop growing. The paranormal field, for all intents and purposes, is really not going anywhere at the moment. We need more people who focus on the humanistic approach. That is, what does this mean to us? Because there's a lot of fields that open up for that. A lot of parapsychological areas, ufology areas, a lot of different things that can all blend into this. So think about these things. Ask, why are you doing this, and what do you expect to attain? You know, where are you going to go with your research? I mean, the only reason to research is to find something, is to discover something, and you need to know what that is. So let me make sure I have no questions. I don't think there are any questions in the chat room
to
address.
No questions in the chat.
So as a quick sum up here, I would like to recommend that you rethink why you're doing this. Take a humanistic approach. That is, study the human condition by way of research, of anomalous research. I prefer to call it that. Approach it so that you gain something. And that's really the big gist of this. Because if you think about this, what if you're primarily investigating spirits, if you found objective proof, yep, that settles it. They exist. Now what are you going to study? What if you're a ufologist and, you know, we capture that flying saucer. It's there. It's got ETs in it. The whole world sees it. Yep, it's an absolute proven fact. Now what are you going to study? Same thing with Bigfoot. You know, if your whole life has been wrapped around Bigfoot expeditions, we find a body. We find, yep, they exist. Now what are you going to study? You got to have those answers. And if you do what I'm recommending, study the human condition by way of these things, you'll never be in want of research material. All right. So with that in mind, as far as announcements, the only one announcement that I have for tonight is to send positive thoughts and energy to those who need it. And that could be you too. So take a moment, join with me, send some positive energy. Like to send some positive energy to Camille Edwards, who's a bit under the weather, and others whom I'm aware of that I'm sending out to. think about those who could use an encouraging word, and don't just stop at sending out the energy, the positive energy. Why not give them the good word? Give them a call tomorrow or whenever. Just be encouraging. Leave them a gift, if you will. All right, so Vicki, you are in Sedona.
I am in Sedona, Arizona. And it's been my third time here in 12 months. It's amazing. This is a really incredible place. You know, there's a bit of a history here for me. You know, you were talking earlier about people having their own, you know, philosophy and a mission statement, Doug. That is my deal. I mean, I had a friend living here for several years who said, Vicki, you have to go to Sedona. You have to come here. And I go, yeah. It's because we all have our own journey, and it's whatever stage we're on, whatever part of our evolution. Part of me says, geez, I should have come here before. But I'm not so sure in that journey I would have been ready for it. Mm-hmm. And I know that kind of leaves a kind of an open mystery kind of thing there. But there is a mystery. There is a mystery about this place. You know, you were talking about people doing research, Doug, and having that, you know, something to really anchor about the human condition. I got to tell you, mine has been totally selfish. My metaphysical journey has been to understand myself. I'm totally selfish about it. I need to prove to my own mind how my mind works, how the energy works, what I see, what I feel. And I never really cared about proving to people if there's ghosts, because I just wanted to know my own mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was my reality, but I wanted to prove to my own mind about where these various elements of reality exist. I love to explore the collective unconscious, you know, Carl Jung in his famous words, of course. And how is it that unilaterally across the planet, people, you know, almost simultaneously start in a similar behavior, or a trend starts, you know, tipping points and the sociologies of that. Because it all lends back to understanding my own mind, what I'm observing. Because I need to know what I'm observing. Mm-hmm. I need to know through my own eyes what reality I'm in. And, of course, I see people with different realities. So this is very relevant to talk about when you're talking about the quote, end quote, the Sedona experience. It really is the Sedona experience. Let me just say, around 1987, just a wee bit of history. You know, Sedona had been around for a while, but it was around 1987. I can't for the life of me remember his last name right now. A fellow by the name of Jose something. They were talking about the, you know, it's like this harmonic convergence was occurring. You know, they talk about it astrologically and so on, all the way down the metaphysical track. So they started converging here, talking about the vortex energy, talking about ley lines, and we'll get to that in a second, what that is. But they started to collect here. People, only about 11,000 people right now apparently live in the Sedona area, but over in the Oak Creek area is another 9,000 people, and it's quite spread out. And I must say it's magnificently beautiful, because architecturally there's rules here. If you build, everything must blend in with the environment, must blend in with the geography. So there's a lot of those, you know, reds and adobe colors and, you know, cream colors. It's just nothing is obtrusive when you come to Sedona. You don't see any of those big sore thumb buildings. It's and there's nothing taller than a particular height. And it's just extraordinary. Visually, it's extraordinary. But there are 5 million tourists a year through Sedona. So you talk about what's that attraction, you know, what's that energy attraction? I mean, it's not just because they did good advertising, because you don't see a lot of advertising about Sedona.
Yeah, but there's that metaphysical way, you know. I mean, that's something I've discovered in this community is
It's an underground.
It
somehow.
Is. It's just calling, is what it is.
It is.
It's a calling. I mean, and it's even more intense than what I experienced with in the paranormal research community. I mean, I'm frankly, it restored my faith in humanity. You know, everybody, people who are into metaphysics, they all have one common underlying theme. They want to improve the world. They give of themselves. They want to help others. I love that. And I'm...
Well, and this is the place.
Yeah.
This is, it has the one single mission of enlightenment. That's it. There is, by the way, I just want to throw this in. And I just, as I understand this, this is North America, not just U.S., but it's the third highest for weddings. There's Hawaii, Vegas, and Sedona. So it is that place where people bond. They come together. They connect. You know, so it's an amazing place for that. But it you will find, you know, I just noticed in the chat room, Eric talking about the Red Planet Diner. I've been there. I love that place. They actually had like this UFO spaceship hanging from the ceiling. It's great.
Cool.
You know, but you will find, oh, geez, anything metaphysical that you can imagine is located in Sedona, a psychic on every corner. There's the New Age Center. There's Sedona Magazine. You know, for a population of, in the whole area, for around 20,000, it's really got everything. And if you can't, it does not have a Walmart, I might say.
Really?
There's no such thing here. You must travel another.
Oh, my God.
I know. If you want any of those shopping center things, you have to go about 45 minutes north to Flagstaff. And for some people who might be listening to the show, Sedona is about two hours north and west of Phoenix. So it's, you know, it's in that, it's, oh, 5,000, it's 5,000 above sea level. Phoenix is zero. So you understand that there's a whole different feel. The air is different. The feelings are different. So it's quite an amazing place. So you will find anything imaginable. And, you know, not to mention the competition, Doug, but the Sedona University is here, a metaphysical university.
Mm-hmm.
And many alternate types of spiritual churches. It is a seeking place. Now, the thing about Sedona are the ley lines and the vortexes. That's what they talk about in the draw. Now, look, a lot of this, I don't know if you're going to have the actual factual information, except ley lines are these kind of magnetic energy flows around the planet, and there's converging spots, and this is like a crossover if you, you know, you got longitudes, latitudes, and then different kind of magnetic forces around the Earth. Well, Sedona happens to be a pretty big one. Now, what I wonder about is if there are other places on the Earth, how come they haven't had the same attraction, seeming attraction, as Sedona has had for an eclectic audience?
Good question.
You know, because it's, I live, you know, straight north, a few hours by flight, and I live about 20 minutes north of an equivalent, apparently an equivalent kind of vortex area, and it's a Bible Belt, but it doesn't have that same collection of people.
It's too cold.
We have nice weather. Honestly, it's about the same right now, I'll have you know. So there's some anomalies going on here. But why is it Sedona? Now, there are tremendous UFO sightings here, too. Phoenix Lights is a very famous one from a number of years ago. Sightings over this whole area, this whole flight path, I might add. So it attracts that kind of energy. Now, in any of the literature that you will find here, they will tell you which are the primary vortex spots. You can hike, I'll tell you, there's thousands of places. I've had friends live here for years, and, you know, they haven't seen it all. you can miss so much nooks and crannies of things. But there are several primary areas with just, they'll say, this is a vortex, that's a vortex. So what's a vortex? Now, it's this energy spot that is like from beneath the earth to above. Apparently, it goes in a spiral, you know, that spiraling kind of energy, and it moves. And it creates these little energy vortexes. My favorite place is Bell Rock. Now, I just read some literature not too long ago that each of these centers has their own feel, and Bell Rock is that playful little people kind of energy. And
I went, not the little people again.
The little people. And I've seen some amazing photographs, by the way, and I know that doesn't necessarily interest a lot of people, but it does. I love that. You know, anyway, we could go on and on about photographs. But it's the feel. So that's where, from what you were talking in the first half of the show, Doug, and what's important to me is how I feel. I want to know how I think. I want to know what that means to me. I want to know what kinds of new eyes am I seeing the world through as a result of a place I've experienced. And, I mean, we could say there's a lot of psychosomatic elements going on here. But then how do you feel when you get home? Are you changed? I have seen people changed. So the Sedona experience is to say you are never the same once you've visited Sedona. I believe it. I absolutely believe it. You know, Deanna's saying it's in the rocks, Vicki, and she's saying that in the chat room. And, you know, I believe that.
The red rocks.
The red rock are conduits of a particular kind of energy. Boy, the visual is spectacular. It's embracing, enveloping, it's warm. And, of course, that red rooted in the root chakra. It's the feel of it. But going to different places, I will say, will give you a different feel. And that's been, again, this is my third trip here. And I'll say that for all the different places I have experienced, I have had different feelings. So what kinds of feelings would they be? Sometimes I feel very introspective, you know, or I'll feel, sometimes I've actually gotten a little bit ill and tired, to be honest. And it's not a sick feeling, but I can feel my body is kind of rearranging itself. So a lot of people say they come here for healings. So is that just a jet lag that I had or, you know, an off day? I could say that. There's no question that I could say that. But I've been here three times now to say there is something absolutely to it. I've been to Montezuma Castle. That's an amazing place where, you know, the tribes built this castle right into the rock. I mean, it's just a phenomenal place to be. But how they would live with the desert, to live with the environment, you know, the Navajo, this is the home of the Navajo, been around for thousands of years, primarily the Dene tribe of the Navajo, that's their area, and spectacular people, strong, but very, it's a different feel. I can't explain. They are very much in touch with themselves. You know, they're very in their bodies and rooted. So let me just say, I recommend to anybody, I'm going to sound like my old friend Albert years ago, you know, you got to come to Sedona. But I sound like, you know, they should almost pay me to be a, you know,
spokesperson.
That's right. Marketing. But it's, even if you're a non-believer, very objective, and you've never heard what a vortex is, you will feel different when you've been here. Now, the reason I'm going to tell the audience right now, one of the reasons I'm here at this moment is one of my daughters came here a few years ago. She was just spiritually called to come here and happened to meet her husband-to-be. Well, they decided to actually come and live here after. A year ago, they legally got married, but they had their wedding and renewal of their wedding vows this weekend. And
that's great.
Yeah, it's just awesome. So this time, most of the people who came to this event this weekend had never seen Sedona, never been here. And because I know the natures of these people who are not metaphysically inclined, they are not the same. I watched them day after day change, you know, at all the events that have been planned. And they're very, and relaxed and attentive toward each other. And people were putting their cell phones away, or, you know, one husband is telling his wife, put that away. And he actually wrapped it up in a little baggie and tossed it in the suitcase. Nobody's allowed. It's like, be in the moment. It's quite a phenomenon to watch how it changes people. I have two grandbabies here this weekend, and not a bad peep out of either of these children. They're, you know, 1.5 and 3.5, and everybody says, wow, they're normal kids in the way that they have a bad day or get cranky when they need a nap. But I'll tell you, these children are amazingly relaxed here. And we just sit back and just are amazed by it.
Well, there's a good reason to move Sedona right there if you have kids.
I mean, that's what they're thinking. So it's really quite quite a spectacular place. Now, I noticed there's a little question in the chat about how the energies in Sedona and Portland are similar. I have not been to Portland, so I can't answer that question, but I will tell you that my son-in-law is very drawn. They're thinking that they might leave Sedona next year and take the next step, and they're thinking of Portland. He has a draw to that too. So it's I've heard both negative and positive about Portland. There's areas of Portland that I've heard that are very eclectic little communities also. So, but again, if you want to know, that is on one of the ley lines in the intersections. So it's very interesting, these little spots.
Mm-hmm.
So there was another comment up there I'm reading. I'm catching up on the chat here. If I miss anything, Doug, please step in. Coffee Pot Rock, yes. There's a couple of places, I have friends who have pictures of ships and different kinds of ships, I might add, and they will say that up in those areas, absolutely, that's where you'll see most of the interdimensional and UFO sightings. Now, I believe that there are areas where those dimensions, let's say the fabric of those dimensions are weaker. I don't know if I'm describing this very well.
Yeah,
but
makes sense.
It's like a thinner veil, so to speak. And if you catch it at the right time, right kind of way, you'll get pictures. Now, my friend who is the great UFO hunter, but he doesn't really look for them. He just always gets pictures of them. It's amazing, his whole life. He will say that the digital can pick up what the eye cannot, because our eyes and our brain are trained to filter out certain things. So what you get, you see, and cameras don't lie that way. They will not filter out what our brain will filter out, and that's why a lot of things get picked up on a camera. So, there's these certain places that there's lots more talk about different kinds of experiences. So,
well, cameras can pick up on infrared.
Yes.
Light work,
yeah.
The eyes can't.
Yeah. There's a couple of places that are talked about here. I haven't been to them, but because they require like a day hike and it's better to camp overnight, and I think not for me. Mm-hmm. But there are these remote places that not a lot of people go to that has way more paranormal activity. And the paranormal activity they talk about is like, you know, you're not alone, or you can feel, you just start to, your mind thinking starts to change. The way you think, the way you're processing, not just emotionally, but the actual thinking and your body feels different. So you know that you're interacting with the environment differently. They explain about the little people or there's other interdimensional beings, and that there's many, many and various dimensions of experience that you will get here in Sedona. I think what's so wonderful for me to be here, you know, for all of us who've been in a lot of different areas who, you know, we're always contrary to the popular opinion. Doug, you come here and we just at home.
Right.
You know,
like-minded people.
That is probably the greatest comfort, too, where I think that is bound to change our own energy. When you know that you're embraced and you're welcomed and nobody's pointing the finger at you and calling you the neighborhood witch.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something to be said for the affirmation and the reaffirming of people investigating to experience similar things. So we're all here for the same reason, and I really believe, without a doubt, people are here to improve humanity. They really do want to become better human beings, and they want to share that experience with other people. I have no doubt about that here. That's almost like a soul mandate. There's a lot of tourism, don't get me wrong. A lot of people make a lot of money down here when you got 5 million tourists going through a year. But
yeah.
There's this sincerity. There really is a sincerity here that I've not found anywhere else. Not that I've been around the whole world, but it's a comfortable place to be.
That's good.
So you can, there's many different sites that you can go to, and I tell you, it's well worth the walk through the internet to look at some pictures. I know it's not the same as the experience, but just see the colors that we're talking about, the deep reds, the oranges, the yellows, the mutations of, you know, different colors of the earth. It's just quite spectacular. But there's a, you can do a little bit of surfing, anyone, if you're interested to research a little bit more on ley lines on the earth. Because I'm not at home, a lot of my files are at home, and I think what we can do later is post a few sites, you know, some links on the church site this week, and that might help you to just, you know, easier access to say, oh, that's where those are, that's what this is. So I have some of those at home, and I'll be sure to pass them along, and we'll put them up on the church site.
That'll be great.
For people. But it's an endless conversation. It's kind of hard to know where to begin and end when you're talking about Sedona. You know, I want to tell you, though, I am not a fan of Phoenix. I don't know why. It's you know, a lot of people. It's a massive place.
Yeah, it's big.
Phoenix is spread out all over the place. It's this massive place. I don't like it, but I guess, again, it's a... you know, it's taste too, right? I have been to the Phoenix Botanical Garden. That is extraordinary. I mean, there's a lot of interesting energy in that place. So, and I've got a few things on my own camera about that place. I was there last spring, in fact. And so it's, there are spots. I'm not saying that Phoenix is without its energy. It's just not necessarily, you know, my cup of tea, so to speak. But when you get up into this elevation, and I think there's a lot of spots throughout that have both a dark and light energy. There's a few spots, I got to tell you, driving through some of this desert, there's some places that creep me out.
Really? Like
yeah.
What?
Well, you know, of course, I'm psychically sensitive anyway, and this, you can feel a history. You know, there's a couple of towns, a little, you know, kind of old West towns. They still feel like you're back 150, 200 years ago, like the Wild West. Or even 100 years ago with these, you know, the big cement buildings with the imprinted cement on the, you know, and you just, it's creepy. It's like...
Creepy.
Oh, creepy. It's like... Get, oh yeah, it truly is like the prison area for sure. And there's a couple of those. But it just feels heavy, and I don't get scared very easily. I'm going to say that. People can scare me, spirits and other stuff, but this has this in-between place that is alarming to me. It's just like, oh, I think, get me out of here.
Spirits don't scare you.
No, but there's an in-between place of energy here, Doug, that is, it's foreign to me, and it's a little unnerving.
Yeah, I've felt that before.
And it's just, you know, you don't feel quite on the ground, and you're not sure. You're not really sure what's, it's not like something's lurking, it's like something's under there. You know, and it's when you start connecting with that energy, you don't feel good.
Well, maybe it's the collective consciousness of the people who live in the area.
Yeah, well, you know, I see that there's a little comment. The prison was far out from Phoenix, a good 20 or 30 miles away from the city. It's now surrounded by single-family homes. Yeah, see, there's a history, an energy of history there. There's a couple of little towns, like especially this one called Prescott. I'm not fond of that place, and I don't want the people of Prescott, you know, saying, "Whoa, what do you mean you don't like our town?" It's actually, we had cause to go there a year ago, driving through, and we stopped. There's really nothing to stop there for, but anyway, there's reasons. And we stopped, and we actually saw people coming out of the courthouse, shackles, chains around their feet, and it's this whole, like a really heavy, kind of scary energy. And you don't forget those images, but it's the feel of the ground. It's the feel of the buildings and the energy of the people. It just feels heavy. So alarming. It's like, I don't think I want to stay here. Can we just move along now?
So, move along, nothing to see.
Yeah, but you know, it's a great time, and if anybody is ever inclined to take a metaphysical journey, mystical metaphysical journey, Sedona, Arizona, it's magical, and you'll meet lots of like-minded people. So it's a beautiful place, and I'm really glad to be here live and talk to the audience. I just want to tell everybody, next week we're going to have Shauna McCoy, one of the students of IMHS, on. And, you know, we'll have lots more to talk about then. A little update in the aftermath of Sedona, and some links for you. So thanks again, everybody in our audience, and white lights to everyone, and have a great week. If there's anything you need to add, Doug?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Reverend John Hightower for helping us behind the scenes. And I just wanted to also let everyone know I will be on another radio program this Tuesday, a couple of days at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll put the link in the chat room, but I'll also post it on the church site, too. It'll be talking about metaphysics and paranormal research. So,
well, we'll be sure to tune into that on Tuesday night, right?
Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. And it's at projectfreedom.ws.
I have to do a little bit of checking out of Project Freedom.
All right. That's all I got. Thanks to everybody. Have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us. Good night.